Welcome to the Scuffed Podcast. I'm Adam Bells in Georgia. With me is Greg Velasquez in Iowa. We talk about U.S. men's soccer. Jamaica at home on Thursday, then Panama away on Sunday, then Costa Rica at home the following Thursday. USMNT has the international window coming up. Greg, how are you doing?
Bells, I'm okay. But before we get into the U.S. men's national team stuff, this World Cup qualifying window, I think we should just address right now what is the much bigger story in the soccer universe, in the universe generally. And that would be the story that Meg Linehan broke for The Athletic regarding Paul Riley and some really predatory behavior in the NWSL and throughout his coaching career. If you haven't read that story, if you're following us, you're deep enough into the soccer weeds that I'm sure you saw the story pop up on your timeline. If you haven't read it yet, I definitely urge you to read that to get a sense of sort of what some of these players are facing. It's a really bad environment at times, and we just want to sort of reiterate it's ridiculous that you have to, you know, say where you stand on these things, but we stand with NWSL players and believe that these women should be safe to pursue playing professional soccer without having to deal with these levels of inappropriateness.
Yeah. Given the power dynamics that these players face, they need the league to be much more responsive to these types of concerns and do a better job of protecting them from people like Paul Riley. So, to the U.S. men's national team, Greg, how are we going to rotate in this window? This is a roster rotation episode.
Jump in. So, this window, I think, takes a lot of the complications away from what we had to deal with last window. I feel like the rotations in this window, my thought is, will be much easier to predict and much easier to manage. What do you think?
My feelings about it, or my opinions about it, are much weaker than they were about the past one. So maybe that's where we agree.
So the specifics of this window are that we have a home game and then away game and then a home game. And for me, that means that you can really easily trot out sort of almost your best 11 on paper in both your home games. And take those 6 points and run with them to the bank and then get what you can out of Panama. I know when I say get what you can, I don't think that means settle for draws or just, you know, hope for the best. I think you should be trying to win that game. I just think that the rotation gets a lot easier when you can, you know, play your very best players on paper in two out of the three games at home.
Yeah.
So you can see where I'm going to be going with my projected lineups.
I guess so. Well, let's do a quick note on the roster. Walker Zimmerman replaced Tim Ream, who was originally on the roster, but is now left off because of a family matter. And it's sounding like, at least the reports out of Germany, are that Brooks might not make the trip. Is there anything new since this morning that you've seen?
Not that I've seen. I think we've now seen it from Twellman, Sam Steschkol, and did I get that right? I listened to Allocation Disorder, but I can never remember.
It's an impossible name to pronounce. I'm sure he doesn't right. mind.
And Jeffrey Carlisle were the three that were sort of credited with it so far. So I'm going to assume that Brooks is out and that they are trying to line up a replacement. I guess really quickly, my thought is you replace him with Miazga. And then I think you should replace him. I think you should carry five center backs. And then gives you some insurance, and then you also have extra layers of insurance with your domestic pool. If something happens to one of them in camp, now you've got James Sands, or you could start getting into Henry Kessler. Where are we going?
Mr. Lean roster over there coming in with the we got to carry five center backs line.
Well, I think you want to, once one of the ones that you were counting on for a lot of minutes has gone down in John Brooks.
Yeah.
I think at that point, I want to make sure we have some bodies.
Okay, so yeah, Miazga, for anybody who's not paying attention, is a regular starter at Alaves in Spain in La Liga, and they just beat Atletico Madrid a week ago or so. So, you know, that's...
He's game fit. He's game sharp. He's got his match sharpness. So he is whatever player, like whatever you rate of Miazga, that's where he is right now. You don't have to worry about whether he's like, you know, he was coming off 3 months of not playing soccer at all after his loan ended. And he was back at Chelsea over the summer.
Yeah, and I think, like, in general, this podcast comes at Miazga with a little bit of skepticism based on his mistake proneness, but I guess I look at it like if you need somebody to throw somebody in to see out a win in Panama and like head the ball away a bunch of times, can't think of anybody better than Matt Miazga.
There you go. I think he is a bit mistake prone, but I also have McKenzie in that camp. So it's sort of just like, I'm pretty indifferent to everyone after Brooks, Miles, and Richards.
Okay. Yeah, I'm the same. So let's do the whole roster. So it's Turner, Stephen, and Johnson at goalkeeper. And as it stands right now, it's Robinson, Richards, McKenzie, and Zimmerman at center back. So maybe Miazga will be added, or maybe Kessler or Sands. And then the fullbacks are Dest, Yedlin, and Moore at right back, Anthony Robinson and George Bello at left back. And in the midfield, we have Tyler Adams, Kellen Acosta, Weston McKennie, Sebastian Legette, Luca De La Torre, Yunus Musa, and Gianluca Busio. And then the forwards would be Tim Weah and Christian Roldan. I mean, Roldan would be a winger / midfielder.
I'm calling him a forward, yep.
Yeah. Brendan Aaronson and Paul Areola, and Matthew Hoppe, Jazzy Zardes, and Ricardo Pepi. So it's a, I mean, we haven't had a roster episode so much. It's a pretty good roster, don't you think?
I'm mostly fine with it. I think it's a very balanced roster. I think it gives plenty of cover for the window. Assuming we bring in that extra center back, then we would be at 5 center backs. So remember, when I was talking a lean roster, part of that was because I thought Zimmerman was next man up. And I knew that if something were to happen, Zimmerman could be at your destination in an hour and a half, no matter what. So that gave us that layer of safety. Now that Zimmerman's already in the camp, if Miazga is the next man up, that's why I think you need to bring him in now, because you wouldn't want to just bring him in on an international flight the day after you found out you lost somebody. So that's sort of my caveat there and how I can contradict my lean projection. But anyway, now you have, if you bring in an extra center back, then you've got your 5 center backs, you've got 5 fullbacks. In my mind, you've got 7 center mids, because I count Roldan as a forward type or a front three guy. And then you've got 7 for your 6 front three slots. So I think it's extremely like balanced and covered for basically any contingency. If you want to debate the quality of the players and whether or not we got the right ones, I think there's plenty of debates that can be had. And I don't think those should be sort of like, you know, dismissed, you know, just because you're on the fringes. We had, 22 outfield players who arrived in the camp last window, and 20 of them started a match. So whoever is in this camp, like, you could basically expect that they're going to have to come in and make an impact on a World Cup qualifying match. There sort of are no small roles at that point.
Right. So what's your view on George Bello being there instead of Joe Scally as a backup left back?
I'd probably prefer Scally, to be honest, or to have Scally in over Shaq Moore. If Shaq Moore is the third right back, which stands to reason given prior call-ups, I'd probably bring Scally instead because of the flexibility that he offers on the left side. If someone rates Bello over Scally today, like, fair enough, you know, there's room for disagreements there. I'd probably prefer Scally and feel safer with Scally. I don't think the Bello experience or familiarity matters. You know, he has his Gold Cup final start, and then he started a road match in Honduras. But the problem is he had a huge, massive mistake in that Honduras game. And it's like, okay, well, we got data on him in Honduras, and it was not the best in 45 minutes. It was a complete blown coverage that cost us a goal. So if you want to talk about who has a lower floor, like, we know Bello's floor involves a pretty big mistake there. So there are going to be worries. Like, I'm not going to feel safe with George Bello. He could get through a game and get the job done for sure. He does it for Atlanta. But there are going to be those questions until he's done it a few more times for the national team.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with all that. I'd rather see Scally there. But I'm not, my energy for being like really angry about it is not the same as it was a few years ago. But yeah, I don't see how you could make that argument. The opposite argument. Like, the opposite argument would be, well, Bello, like you said, does have the experience. And, well, I don't know. It doesn't.
He's an 18-year-old kid with like 6 caps total, right? Yeah. Like he's not a returning World Cup veteran that got us into the knockouts in 2018. So that's where like some of that experience for me kind of falls off. The only justification really I have would be if you just truly rate Bello ahead of Scally at the moment. So if Berhalter just rates him and at that point in the rotation games, doesn't have any minutes for Scally, and doesn't think that getting the camp experience is that important. Because I know people are saying, well, it's really important to get camp experience. If that were the case, I'd actually think it's worse to leave Scally out, because you're just kicking that can down the road, and now you have to bring him in November to get him experience so that you could use him in January. So if camp experience is on your bingo card of something that's important, like that'd be all the more reason to have Scally in now so that you could use him at some future date.
Yeah. The other sort of notable omissions would be Josh Sargent, Jordan Pefok, right?
Yeah, that'd be it for me. But we've talked about this, and this is why I'm fine going lean. Like, you're the coach. You know who you're going to play. So I'm going to play, I guess I'm just assuming, Pepe's probably going to start based on his last performance. If Pepe can't go for some reason, who would you start, Coach Berhalter? Would you start Zardes, Pefok, or Sargent? And Berhalter will say, I would start Zardes. Okay, bring Zardes. You don't need to bring two extra guys who wouldn't play in that role. And if you really like Matthew Hoppe, and he was very good through the Gold Cup for us, he was playing out of his best position, then you might say, if we needed a third forward for some reason, we have Matthew Hoppe or we have Tim Weah. So I think I'm fine with Zardes over Pefok and Sargent. I think I had Pefok on my projection, but it was kind of a coin toss between those two. Sargent would have been the next man.
I guess, yeah. And I guess Daryl DK's having scored a couple of goals in the last week or so and is starting to look a little bit like an omission, although that would be harsh on Berhalter because nobody was calling for DK to be called up a week ago. So
he also now can serve as one of those domestic replacements should we have in camp an injury to any of the three guys who could play forward.
Yeah. Okay. Well, should we just start? Let's just start with the Jamaica game in Austin, like a 20 some thousand seat stadium. I think the game sold out. Who you got starting in that game? Oh, and by the way, I should mention John Arnold and I are going to record a preview of the three opponents for this window tomorrow on the Discord. And then we'll post it in the public feed for everybody to listen.
All right. I love that. That was a great oppo piece ahead of the last window. So I'm really excited for what you and John are going to be discussing because anytime you listen to John Arnold or read John Arnold, you're going to learn quite a bit. So very much excited for that. I'm going to start Matt Turner against Jamaica. Any objection?
None.
I'm going to start Matt Turner in all three games. Spoiler alert. So I'm going to start Miles Robinson at center back with Chris Richards. Is that the big leap? I think that's the big leap in my lineup.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do too. Just because I was going to have Brooks there with Richards.
Same.
Coming off the bench to get a little bit ready for Panama, but now it's Miles and Richards. And honestly, I'd like to start the two of them for all three games. I don't know if that's possible, but
I wouldn't hate it. So I think there is a real question here of whether Berhalter will be comfortable throwing Richards in straight away. Richards has been in two Berhalter camps previously, was not in any of the summer competitions where it was like really heated, and was not in the last World Cup qualifying window. So this would very much be like a lot of trust that Berhalter would have in Richards, I think, to do that. If he wasn't ready for that, it would be Mark McKenzie, right?
Yeah, and I think there's a decent chance we'll see McKenzie or Zimmerman starting this game. It's pretty clear it's pretty clear Miles Robinson will start from a Berhalter perspective, but
unless it's a pre-rotation for some reason because he thinks Miles can't go 270 in the window and would rather have him for games 2 and 3, but I think that's a real reach. I think Miles is starting too.
Yeah.
Okay. And I want him to start. I think Miles is starting also, and I want him to start all three matches. Can I do a bit of a rotation rant right here?
Yes.
It's not a rant.
Yes, do. Please.
All right. I just wanted to sort of clarify. I have no problem with any player in the pool or in the roster like playing 270 minutes. Like, I don't think we need to rotate for any reason other than like a performance drop-off or a health drop-off. So if Tyler Adams plays in the first, he played 270 last window, right? I have no problem with that. I've read some things like, I bet Marsh is pissed that we did this. We shouldn't be playing guys 270 and then sending them back to their clubs. I don't care about whether their clubs are upset that our guys played all three games. That's Marsh's problem to deal with when he gets his international players back to figure out who's ready for that weekend. I only care about rotation insofar as it affects us in the window. So if I'm picking rotation, it's because I think a guy would suffer in performance on the field for the U.S. Over three games.
Yeah, screw the clubs. Who cares about the clubs, man? I've been saying that for weeks. I don't care if
they can have giant rosters and they can spend crazy money on their bench. So rotate.
Yeah. We're not. No favors will be done for Jesse Marsh on my watch.
So anyway, Miles and Richards, my starting center backs. And you're with me still?
Yep.
We're 3 for 3.
Oh yeah.
All right, since I said this is best 11 territory, we're running Destin Robinson as my fullbacks.
Oh yeah, same here. I think the question is, I mean, so I want to see as much of Miles and Richards as possible. I want to see as much of Destin Robinson as possible at fullback. And I guess the complicated stuff comes with the midfield for me, at least.
Yeah, same. And for me, it's not that complicated. I have a pretty clear rating, so I want this midfield trio in game one against Jamaica to be Adams, McKennie, Musa. That's what I'm hoping to see.
Okay, I think I disagree, but very in a very, very mild way. I want to see how Luca Della Torre does for the national team. Because I am taken with this idea that he could be the guy who finds the ball and progresses it. Yet another, I thought, pretty solid performance over the weekend. Another win for Heracles Almelo. But I don't know when I would play him if not in the first game, you know? So it becomes like, okay, where do you slot him in? Do you slot him in against Panama away? Probably not. So put him in there with Adams and McKennie and see what happens. If it doesn't work, you know, pull the plug at halftime.
It's not your job on the line, right? No, I'm mostly kidding. Well, we can sub him in, right? I mean, if we're having issues progressing the ball, especially, and De La Torre is a, you know, allegedly a ball progressing specialist, then that's when you say, okay, 60 minute mark, De La Torre, Luca, you're going in for whoever's kind of struggling. And I kind of have Buzio in the same kind of role, which is I don't want to start Buzio in any of the three games, but if teams are bunkering in the way Canada did, which they absolutely should, it would be criminal at this point for any team that's an underdog against us talent wise to not just sit deep and bunker and make us show that we have some ideas to break them down. That's when it might be like, okay, Buzio might be a better option in midfield than one of these other three ball progressing, or, you know, not less ball progressing center mids.
So you're,
and I think Luca would be in the same boat.
So you're thinking of having Busio and Luca on the bench, ready to go in game one against Jamaica, in case.
I don't even go that far, Bells. I just have Busio in this one, and Luca's left out of uniform in game one.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm gonna say Adams, McKennie, and Luca as my midfield.
All right, it's bold. I like it.
But you know, if it's Musa instead of McKennie, that's fine too.
Musa has started his last two matches for Valencia, so he's got the fitness for it. I think he went about 80 in both of them and was kind of slowing down. So again, perfect time to get 60 out of him and then bring on one of your game breaking center mids if you need to break the game open. What? Because Luca and Buzio are absolutely going to break games open. We can say that. For sure.
I feel more comfortable. I mean, I have a little more confidence in Luca breaking a game open than Busio at this point. But
I'm going to make you defend that. Go ahead and defend it.
Because he can dribble past people. He can dribble past people and find a pass. And Busio can't really. Although I'm not here to bash Busio. I wrote a song this morning apologizing to him. So
Bells isn't lying about that. He didn't just write the song. He's got like some early performances of it on wax.
Oh, it's pretty close, folks. Don't prepare yourselves. But I like how Busio is playing as a six, as a metronome for Venezia. But that performance of his as an eight for the US MNT is seared into my memory from the Gold Cup, and he looked like a fish out of water. I don't see him breaking anything open. At all.
Is this the Canada? Are we talking about Canada at this point, or is it the whole Gold Cup?
Was it Canada where he played as an eight?
He played in that diamond, and that's where everyone soured on him real quick. I was trying to say, let's just ignore this game completely for the midfield and how they played. So I'm just curious. I'm curious if it's mostly Canada or if it's from the following two.
It's seared into my memory, not in a way that I remember who the opponent was, but I think it was that game, and it was just like basic, like repeatable stuff, like being able to turn in traffic with somebody on your back and make something happen. Now he's doing a really good job. USMNT Stan, I know it's really hard to keep track of all the accounts on Twitter, but there is one called USMNT Stan. I think that has Tony Miola as its avatar, that made a video about Busio, three things that make Busio special. And he talked about him checking his mirrors, which is a great phrase. Like he checks his mirrors as he's drifting through the midfield, and, you know, knows, is able to make good decisions, at least in the moments that this guy spotlighted. And I did go back and watch the last three games, Cagliari, Torino, and AC Milan. And he's been playing well consistently. Busio has, as a six. I'm not super interested in him as an eight.
Okay. And I think that's fair. I didn't think he was particularly effective as an eight in those later games against Jamaica, against Qatar, even really against Mexico in the final when he subbed on. So I'm totally on board. And I guess what I'd say is I think there is room for a good player who's good at that sort of deep-lying role to help us in games. Like you go back to Honduras at home in the Nations League. If there were a player who was good at sitting back and picking out passes, playing in Jackson Ewell's spot in that game, it would have been a real help for us. Jackson Ewell wasn't doing it and was not good at a bunch of other things, and that was really kind of devastating for our ability to create chances or to initiate attacks. But if you were to replace him with someone who was more ambitious, trying to hit line-breaking passes, the window is there for somebody to come in and really help the team out. So if that's what we do with Busio and he, you know, shows up and passes the test that Ewell couldn't pass, that would be a big deal as we play teams who, again, at the moment, should only be bunkering against us.
Yeah. That point's well taken. I guess I'm at the point where I don't know what the best combination is in midfield, and coming up with a rotation plan for those three spots feels like pin the tail on the donkey for me. Like I said, I'd like to see De La Torre at the eight at some point and Busio at the six at some point. But to borrow a phrase from Catholicism, the question of what's the right midfield for the U.S. men is a mystery of faith for me.
Okay, that's
I am curious.
That's fair.
I am curious, but also sort of ambivalent about all the possibilities. Like I want to see different like iterations of it, but all of them are also troubling to me at the same time. All the different iterations. Right. You know what I'm saying?
I can totally get on board with that. That's why I want to start with, in my mind, are sort of our three best players in that space.
Okay.
And then if it's not working, we bring on the change up guys who are completely different styles. Like, I don't think Legette is necessarily like a totally different style of player than any of the other three, where he's going to do something drastically different than what the other guys are doing. So that's where I'm like, okay, well, Busio could come in and actually change what that deep lying player is trying to accomplish.
Okay.
Bring him in for 30 minutes.
I obviously would not mind that too much. I just want to see, like I said, I just want to see De La Torre at some point, and this seems like the best opportunity to get him a start.
There we go. Okay. So central midfield, we have some options that we're at least excited and interested in seeing.
Yeah, it'll be a very interesting window to see how Berhalter does this. What do you expect him to do for the midfield? Do you think he'll do the three best players like you said, or
I kind of half expect, like, I think it's 60-40 that McKenzie starts over Richards. I think McKenzie's more likely to start, even though I want Richards. In midfield, I think it's Adams, McKennie, Legette as the starters.
That sounds right to me, too.
In game one. But I'd love Musa, and I'd say that all Musa has to do is play exactly at the level he's played for us in the friendlies that he's appeared in so far, to be a sort of nailed on 140-minute player in the next triple World Cup qualifying window.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to do anything more than that.
Right. Okay, let's go to winger. I'll say my main framework for the wingers in this whole window is I want to see as much of Weah and Aronson as possible, with Hoppy as well, since I assume he'll end up playing on the wing more than he does at striker.
All right. Do you have a starting duo here, or is it sort of just like roll the dice
Aronson and Weah.
The loser sits out?
Aronson and Weah.
Yeah, same. I feel like if anyone were going to make the case that Aaronson would be better off the bench, it would be this podcast. But I think you run with your, what I think would be our two most effective players in Aaronson Weah for sure. For me at the moment are those guys.
Yeah. Hoppy was on the bench again this weekend, right? Did he not get off the bench again? Am I making that up?
I think that's twice in a row that he hasn't gotten in.
Which is not.
But I have him on the bench.
Go ahead.
I have him on the bench in this game because I've also mapped out like who the available subs would be and who would not be in uniform. I have him on the bench here with, I think, Roldan. I think Ariola could be the odd man out. I think Ariola is a Berhalter favorite, but I feel like he would rather have, it seems like this might be a little narrative-y, but it seems like he does enjoy the options that Christian Roldan gives him off the bench. And in my mind, like my gut's saying, if you absolutely like need offense, like a wild card, then it's Hoppy. But if you're just looking for like a stabilizing presence, you'd want Roldan. And so Ariel ends up being the guy who doesn't have a job on the bench for game one.
Yeah. And Weah is coming into this camp in probably the best form. I know you don't really like that term, but he's coming in the best form of like the past 3 years for him. He's had two good performances in a row, including like a really big one against Olympique Marseille over the weekend. Got an assist.
Yeah, Weah just does a lot of good things, a lot of things that help your team. Like he's good on the ball. He doesn't turn it over. He's good in combination. He can stretch a back line. He can come in and possess and play and like link up. So I think he basically has all of the tools that you would want. He's an excellent defender from the front. So like for me, Weah is the best winger in this group from like an overall standpoint.
Why are you refusing to say the word verticality?
He did get vertical on that assist against 10 man Marseille.
Yeah. He had a few other near assists in that game too. Two went off the post, I believe. So really exciting to see Timmy coming back and roaring back into camp. So we agree on everything except one of the eights so far. Really fun podcast, guys. And then who's your striker?
It's Pepe.
Same.
Well, let's drill into the subs. Do you have Ariola dressing or do you have him left out and rolled or who do you have as like our available players? Who's out of uniform? Let's do that.
Oh man, I didn't go that deep on this. I sort of figured out who my preferred subs would be for this game. And they would be, you know, hopefully we're up 3-0 at halftime. Bring on Zardes for Pepe and Hoppy for Aaronson at the hour mark. Musa for De La Torre. Maybe McKenzie for Richards, although that doesn't make as much sense as it did when it was Richards for Brooks.
Yeah, you want Richards racking up those extra minutes,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
In a 3-0 game. Out of uniform, I've got Luca for this game. Ariola, because I think he's better served as like a starter than as a sub. And then I've got Shaq Moore as the third right back or fifth fullback overall. And then whoever the fourth fullback or the fifth center back that we bring in, I'm guessing would also be out of uniform.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not ready to list those I don't have in uniform, but those are my subs. Should we move on to Panama?
Let's do Panama.
Okay. Same. Turner's going to be the goalkeeper for both of us. Who do you have as your center backs against Panama?
So this one, I'm going McKenzie and Miles. So I am subbing Richards out for this game. Now, if Richards is lights out against Jamaica, the way Miles was in the Gold Cup and like leaves no questions unanswered, then for me, you just run him back again.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I also have my McKenzie starting this game as the left center back. And, you know, he was pretty good against Honduras. Wouldn't you agree? Like he had one.
Yeah, he was. He had the one bad giveaway when the ball was at his feet where he passed it directly to the pressure defender, right, similar to what he did against Mexico in the Nations League final a couple of times.
Sort it out, Mark. Sort it out.
But overall, he was solid. He had the amazing big brothering of a Honduras dude to key the second goal.
That's true.
And then let's see what else I want to say about him. On the goal sequence at Honduras, like he played it perfectly. So I've been watching that over and over again, in part to just make sure I'm being fair to Bella when I say that he had the biggest blown coverage of the sequence, even more than Brooks. And McKenzie played it perfectly. Like there was a moment of like, it could have been panic, but he got tight on his man, goal side of his man. For his guy to do anything, it would have taken a perfect cross from the wing and a perfect execution from the attacker. And, you know, when you're playing, a lot of the teams we're playing against, you don't get those levels of perfection. So as long as you don't just completely blow your coverage and leave a man wide open 5 yards out from goal, it's most teams aren't going to score against us.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's plenty of reason to be bullish about McKenzie, except for that lingering feeling that he may make a terrible mistake at any moment. Who do you have as the fullbacks?
So here I'm rotating both and going with Yedlin and Bello, and that seems pretty straightforward to me. Now it's possible Berhalter just likes Shaq Moore better, and Shaq Moore would have been ahead of Yedlin last camp, but for his club situation coming off the Gold Cup, I think that's unlikely. I think Berhalter trusts Yedlin in these games. Whatever his shortcomings might be, I think he believes Yedlin will get the job done. I don't really have a problem with it either. Where do you stand on it?
I was going to play Moore and Robinson, have Robinson be the left back again. I do see the logic of Bello starting this game. Because it's a game where it's almost like we can say, you know what, if you want to make another mistake, do it down in Panama where we can drop points, you know? And it's like, it's weirdly okay. But yeah, I'll take more over Yedlin at right back.
Okay. All right. So, but you're sticking with Robinson
because I want to
win. Sticking with Robinson or did you cave?
Cause I want to win the game. So I'm going with Robinson.
All right. All right, now I'm going to be listening really closely to your Costa Rica projection too. But I'm with you. Like Bello makes me nervous, and I would actually, the way I would disagree is that I don't think we can really, even though I'm rotating too, dropping points to Panama could be a bit costly. Panama are had a good window in the first window, so that suddenly makes them a threat to be our main competition for like third, fourth, that dividing line between auto qualify and have to go to a playoff. So making sure Panama don't get points could actually end up being a big deal.
I think a draw would be fine because we'd be denying them the 3 points at home. And I think we can, you know, I feel like the lineup I put out there against Panama can beat Panama. So, and I, you know, we could beat them on any given night with any given iteration of this roster. So that's a fact as well.
Just for anyone who's not following all of the windows really closely, so last window, Panama tied Mexico at home, which I feel like for them would be considered like a bonus point over the whole campaign. So even though, you know, that win at home, draw on the road is everyone's mantra, like drill down and be like, okay, but in this game, what's a happy outcome and what's not? I didn't say happy ending. What's a happy outcome? And Panama getting a point against any point against Mexico in either of their two games, I think, is a good outcome for them. So they're happy with that. And they beat Jamaica 3-0 on the road. So they've basically set the Jamaica narrative as Jamaica struggling because of that 3-0 win. So and then they tied Costa Rica in Costa Rica. So Panama got 2 points out of two of the tougher games historically in the CONCACAF region.
Yeah. They annihilated Jamaica too. I mean, the scoreline was not flattering to them. It all started with one of their young center backs stepping, winning the ball at midfield, dribbling to the top of the 18, and then just hitting an absolute rifle with his left foot into the bottom corner. A kid who plays for Arminia Bielefeld, but never almost doesn't play. You know, he has like 30 minutes on the season. So yeah, it could be a tough game down in Panama City. That doesn't mean I want to start Bello, though.
Okay, fair enough. And I already have to correct myself so no one comes after me. That Costa Rica draw, I'm sorry, was actually in Panama City.
Okay.
So it wasn't, that's no longer, I mean, it's still probably not a pushover, but no longer like hardest game in CONCACAF territory.
Okay, yeah. Well, this is their only home game of the window is the one against us. In the middle of the window. Who do they play? Who do they bracket us with? Do you have that up?
Oh, I've got that. It's not bracketed the same way as last window where it's like a mini league. And I should have pointed this out for Jamaica too. We could see pre-rotation from Jamaica because they have two other games against teams that they might consider more important to get points from. They play Canada in game two, and that's a home game for them. And then they play at Honduras in game three. That's Jamaica. So they could rotate against us, being like, whatever, we'll tank and we'll save our reserves, our fuel for the next two games, which are going to be more important.
I'll believe the tanking when I see it. Interesting. Well, interesting thing about that Panama drubbing of Jamaica in Kingston is that Mikhail Antonio's only game he played of the window, and they totally shut him down. Like, he didn't do anything, which is striking because he's like one of the best strikers in the Premier League so far this season. I just want to say that. What were you going to say?
Well, then I was just going to get into Panama and their opponents. So they've got El Salvador on match day one, and that's away, which it's not easy to go there and get a result, as we learned. And then they've got us in Panama City for game two, and then they're playing in Canada. And I don't know where that game's going to be played in Canada, but that's their third match. So I'm not sure how they will rotate for that. I know Honduras last window rotated everyone away to El Salvador and still got a draw. So Panama, again, might pre-rotate against El Salvador and think that they can get that point or even three versus us at home. It's going to be really interesting to see what everyone does on that first match day.
Yeah. Okay. So let's go to the midfield. You've got Bello and Yedlin as your fullbacks. I've got Robinson and Moore. Who's your number six?
This is where I'm running out Kellen Acosta, and I am giving Adams a break. And it's just because I want to make sure he's got legs. I know we ran him for 270 last window, but we also did a little bit of right backing with him, which was ineffective. I want him in the center midfield when he's playing, and I want him to be physically able to dominate the games, and I don't want him fatigued for any of his minutes.
Yeah.
Especially when I think we have a solid backup in Acosta.
I agree. He's a solid backup, and he's getting the nod from old Bells too. Acosta at the six. Who are your eights?
I'm running McKennie and Legette.
Okay.
So I'm still not ready to throw Luca or Buzio into the starting lineup. And I'm rotating Musa because while he has started for Valencia twice in a row and gone 80, those were a week apart. It's a different story to, start back-to-back games in short turnaround. So giving Musa a little breather here.
Okay. What if we just throw together an accidental recipe and just like try to tank the Panama game, put Bello and Busio and De La Torre in the starting lineup and just roll the dice.
So like a full Ted Lasso, but then they prove us wrong and it's a real, real heartwarming story.
Yeah, I would love that. No, I've got McKennie and Musa starting as my eights in this game at Panama. Just because I want that toughness in the midfield and ball security.
That's all fair. I like what Legette was a contributor in that away match to Honduras. So for his 45 minutes that he got, so I'm like, I'm feeling better about him than I was a few months ago after Gold Cup.
Yeah. I don't feel quite as much better about Legette as I did a month ago or a couple months ago as you do. Does that sentence make any sense? I feel maybe a little better about Legette, but not that much better.
There's a delta in how much better I feel about him than how much better you feel
about
him.
There we go. Let's go to winger. But I am going to Legette. There's good news for the Sebastian Legette team in the Costa Rica lineup.
Okay. All right. Can't wait to hear what that is. it's like you said, there's this with this group of center mids, like as long as we don't get cute, there are a lot of iterations that I'm going to be excited to see.
Yeah. I still hold out hope that Legette could be a good performer consistently for the national team. But obviously that was not going to happen in the last window. But anyway, who are your wingers against Panama?
I'm starting Weah and Areola.
Weah and Areola?
Yeah, Weah and Areola are my starters here. And I've got Aronson and Hoppy available off the bench.
Okay.
So this one, Roldan's not dressing, and I don't know. I feel like it's one of those, like, Roldan's getting to be so underrated, he's overrated situations.
Yeah. I'm going to start Hoppy and Areola. Again, hopefully a scrappy, battling lineup to face Panama and scratch out a win. Or a draw would be fine.
Yep, and I'm not tied to any, like, way out for sure. I just feel like we're going to have to rotate somewhere, and I feel like Aronson's the guy to give a breather to in this away match, and Weah can just – Weah is such a good defender. I know that's Aronson's bit, too, that he can really be a nuisance. Weah just does more big brother defending for me.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, well, where do you put Hoppy on the big brother defending continuum? Because he was a handful in the press in Gold Cup, right?
Yes, no, not, I would say not really. I wasn't terribly impressed with his defending, and most of it was I didn't think he was a particularly organized defender.
Fair.
There was a lot of just like he's a hustle defender and he's going to scrap, and I don't think he'll back down from any challenges. But he's all over the place, and I feel like he almost like puts you in a bind as far as compromising your shape. And it's not always a huge deal, but like that's what you see when you're watching him defend is he's a chaser. He's going to chase.
Now you're making me feel like a wreck soccer parent when I see somebody running fast and I'm like, yay. Okay. And then striker, who do you have?
I've got Zardes starting this one.
Same. Just a responsible, in my opinion, a responsible, and reliable choice for a tough away game in Panama.
So I'll just say then who I don't have in uniform, and it's Buzio Roldan and Shaq Moore again. And I think this is what happens when you bring in that extra player per position group. Whoever that fifth man is, or whoever that extra man is, fifth or seventh, depending on the line. I don't think you have to rotate that guy to like give him a consolation prize of starting or of dressing for a game. Maybe Berhalter does prefer that and likes to have that, for man management. But I'm just like, you know who your guys are, and whoever that extra man is, he's the extra man, and he sort of stays the extra man roster wise as well.
No, yeah, that'll be whoever ends up having to be on the bench or not dress for a couple of games. It is going to be kind of sad for them. But, you know, cry me a river. Just deal with it. Let's move on to the Costa Rica lineup.
Sure. Just for a note from last window, Zimmerman was the only outfield player other than Jackson Ewell, who was the late addition, who didn't play in any of the games. As I said, 20 out of 22 got starts. And Roldan was the guy who didn't start but played in all three matches.
Yeah, okay. So for the Costa Rica game in Columbus, October 7th, October 13th, Scuffed is going to be there. We're going to have a tailgate party, so look for details on that. Turner in goal. Who do you have as center backs?
I'm back to Richards and Miles.
Same.
And again, unless Richards, if Richards has a shocker in game one, then he's pulled at half and it's McKenzie the rest of the way, right?
Yeah, probably. For some reason,
I don't expect that. So,
For some reason, I wonder if he'll have as much patience with Richards as he had with McKenzie, Berhalter, that is. Because he's had a lot of patience with McKenzie. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean, yes, he had the luxury of being patient with him in that Mexico game that matters but doesn't matter. You know, like, it's a real test, but you have the luxury of letting the guy finish the test. And if he fails over the rest of the 90 minutes, McKenzie had really bottled it for 80 more minutes, 119 more minutes, then...
Which he did not do, then, really.
Right, yeah. Right. Then you don't bring him in for any further tests, potentially. But he got to stay in there, and he got to do well. You can't do that. If Richards is having a howler, if that's happening in the first 45 minutes of a World Cup qualifying game that you need points on, you pull him and you throw in a guy who has done a little bit better. I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think he's going to have a howler. I think he's going to be fine. Okay, Richards and Miles, that's who I have starting in the Costa Rica game. Who are your fullbacks?
So I'm just going right back to Robinson and Dest. Two starts for each of them over the window, both at home. I think that suits Sergiño Dest very well. I think Robinson has shown that he can probably play anywhere, but home or away, but this just gives him a break between starts, which I think is best case.
Okay. I'm going to put, in contradiction of some things I've said over the last month, I'm going to put Dest at left back and DeAndre Yedlin at right back.
There we go. Okay, so you've gamed it so that you don't end up having to play Bello in a match, right? That's sort of the idea. Was that almost like your guideline here?
Yeah, and I think sort of, yeah. And I think Yedlin, because let's be honest about Bello. He's full of promise, but his problem in the Honduras game, the mistake he made in the Honduras game, is not an isolated mistake in his tape. That's, I think you've made this point before. It's true. He loses runners. I'm not saying he does it all the time, but it happens enough that this isn't just like, oh, that happened one time. So yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to say argue against my own earlier comment. The tape, the one I was talking about was from maybe like 2 years, like first game of a season 2 years ago, just as a disclaimer on that, where he, again, just like doesn't recognize that the shape is broken down and now it's defend the goal. That's the priority. And you just have to defend the goal. So I'll also just kind of elaborate on why I give him the most blame. I think I may have already done it on the TSS crossover, but it's not a bang bang play, right? Brooks gets beat and Brooks made a decision that wasn't necessarily the wrong decision to try to step. And then he failed to execute it and gets beat badly. Everyone else on that play, basically from then on, can see the whole play and make decisions based on it that should be pretty straightforward. Like Adams now has to recover and prevent that man Adams is chasing the guy who gets the through ball, right? And it's very clear that his job is to prevent that guy from dribbling in and scoring on Matt Turner, which he does. He forces a cross from like outside the box. Mm-hmm. As soon as Brooks gets beat, Honduras have two runners entering the box. And the only guys who can get to them to cover them are McKenzie and Bello. McKenzie does a perfect job getting the nearest guy, the near post run, and he's tight on him goal side. There's basically no ball that guy can score on. And Bello just does not get anywhere near goal side of his man, even though there's no other decision to make. Like, this is as straightforward as soccer decisions get. And he just jogs behind him. He may as well just sit down. He's not doing anything. And what that allows the guy to do is it allows the server to not have to hit a perfect ball. And it allows the finisher to choose which finish he wants to make and a set of steps up however he needs to set them up. And it ends up being like a difficult acrobatic finish on the play. But if Bello's tight on that guy, none of that would even matter. Like, most likely outcome is that he just clears the first ball away because it's really easy to clear a ball, while it's really hard to try to score with somebody draped all over you. Or the guy is super disrupted and can't get a good finish on frame. So if Bello just does his job there, we probably don't give up a goal.
Right. I didn't realize it was so controversial that that was mostly Bello's fault. I mean,
well, I just hear mostly, I mean, Brooks. We've heard a lot about Brooks's dip in form and, you know, because of that play, and it's not a great play for John Brooks. But John Brooks, you know, isn't like the easiest thing to fix about that play.
And I agree with you. Okay, so I've got Destin Yedlin at fullback. How are you going to set up your midfield?
So I'm bringing Adams back. I'm just running back basically the first game lineup. So I'll just tell everyone that right now. It's Adams, McKennie, Musa.
Okay. I'm going to go Adams.
And obviously, you know, if there are... Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. You first.
Just the same thing that we talked about with Richards. If there are things in these games, performance-wise, that indicate that changes would help the team, like, of course, you make them. If Buzio comes in for a sub showing and totally carves up a defense, that could change the calculus here. And the same for any other guy who just has a lights-out showing, because the data's still thin on a lot of these players. So if Luka comes in and is just an amazing ball progressor with the ball at his feet and then keeps choosing the right passes to spring guys, like, no brainer, you start him in this game. So I'm not, the third game is going to be based on a lot of what we saw through the first two games,
yeah,
probably.
Yeah. This is all of these rotation ideas are pretty provisional, but the third one is the most provisional of all. Adams, I've got Adams at the six and then Legette and Musa as my eight. So Legette gets his start. McKennie has started the first two games for me already. And I feel like at least on paper, the Costa Rica game is the one where we're most likely to have just a ton of the ball with them sitting back. Do you agree with that?
I'm going to have to listen to John Arnold
to
make sure, because I don't know if Costa Rica is still running sort of their 5-4-1 where they sit deep and wait for you to get impatient and then just hammer you on the counter. Or if they're opening up a little bit better, or how good their defensive passive shape is, or what. So I'm really going to be banking on Arnold here. So You got to do a real good job leading that interview.
Okay. I'll do my best. I guess I see LeJet as, you know, if you look at all of these eights we brought, McKennie, De La Torre, Musa, and LeJet, the one that it's easiest to envision arriving in the box with the right timing to like put the ball in the goal, it's LeJet for me. It's the most likely to do that. And so I want to see him in this game, because we're going to need, you know, when Berhalter ball comes to its consummation in this international window, we're going to need, you know, there's going to be that cutback from the Man City zone, and we're going to need LeJet arriving and scoring goals. So one very specific thing in the game that is making me put LeJet in the starting lineup.
Well, if people are listening closely, they know that I've got McKennie starting three games, and so it could easily be LeJet rotating in for him if he can't do that, if physically he's just taxed.
Yeah.
And I don't hate it. I don't hate what you're saying. I do think that's a strength of LeJet. He's an excellent, I think Bob Morocco pointed this out in a online conversation, that while LeJet doesn't progress the ball by passing it spectacularly or at an elite level, he's involved in a lot of ball progressions because he often receives the ball in advanced areas, which means he's getting into good areas to receive the ball up high, including, like you're saying, from those cutback zones where he can then score goals from inside the box.
Yeah, I can't remember when it was that he did a lot of that, but I think it was maybe in the friendlies last fall or something.
Yeah, it was in the European window where he was the March friendlies he was doing it. And then he did it. He also did it in the November friendly when he wasn't playing as the false nine. In the second game, he came in as a midfielder, and I think had a goal and almost a second goal that got. Yeah, he almost he would have had a second goal in that Jamaica game, but for Panama. Sorry, we're all over the place. But for Sebastian Soto blocking it off the line, and then Soto went on to score in the same sequence.
Ah, that's right. That's right. Okay, who are your wingers against Costa Rica?
So I'm back to the same. It's Aaronson and Weah. So I have Weah starting all three matches as well. But again, that'll all depend on how everyone's holding up.
I have Aaronson and Weah again, but I'm going to put Weah on the left wing this time. I mean, who cares? Because they're going to be
it's your world.
End up switching places throughout the game if passes any precedent. But I do have some concerns about Dest as a left back and how he'll work together with a left wing. It seems to me that Weah can be more of like the wide winger option.
Yep.
And Dest could work better with that than Aaronson, who will like almost automatically tuck in to the half space. So.
No, it's a great shout. I forgot that you had Dest there. So, yep, perfect sense.
Okay. And then striker, are you going back to Pepe or are you sticking with Zardes?
So on paper, I'm going back to Pepe. I feel like if that's who you think is your best player, that's who you start in two matches. But again, if Pepe is invisible in game one and Zardes is really active and he's coordinating really well with players around him in the game he starts, then it'd be easy to tip back over to Zardes.
Yeah. Same here. Pepe at striker. It's going to be exciting. It's exciting to have all three of these games coming up. I don't know what to think. I don't know what to expect.
So what I kind of think about it going into it is, I think the floor we set in the last window is a decent floor. You know, like we didn't play great, but we didn't get like, other than that first 40 minutes against Honduras, and even that, they didn't like run through us. You know, it wasn't Matt Turner making save after save or, you know, shot after shot, missing target. Like, it was just an even ugly game for 45 minutes. And it felt self-inflicted, and that's why there was so much sort of negative energy around it. But the floor we set as far as how we play last window is pretty fine. Like, if that's as bad as we look, we're doing A-OK. And I think there's just real reason to believe that we have a lot more that we can accomplish. You know, watching past cycles, it never felt like, oh, well, this guy who has, when we watch the team struggle in past cycles, it never felt like, oh, we just need this guy to hit the level that we know he's capable of playing at, and it'll all be improved. Like, it never really felt like that. It was like, oh, this is where our players are, and this is about as good as it's going to be. And I think now there's no question that there is untapped potential here with the player pool we have and what we've seen on the field so far.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess I just don't know how to tap that potential. It doesn't, like, the midfield thing is kind of the key the key matter to me, because part of me says, well, yeah, we should, of course we should play our most talented players as the three midfielders, Adams, Musa, and McKennie. Let's just run them off the field and, you know, keep the ball and win the ball and keep the ball and win the ball and just win the game that way. You know, we don't have to do something intricate. But then I think, well, like if we do want to do the intricate thing and possess the ball, have little triangles all over the field, move the ball up the field methodically, play beautiful soccer, which by the way, Heracles Almelo does do. They play a very nice brand of soccer. Then maybe we need Luca Della Torre, or maybe we need Gianluca Busio, who looks, dare I say, elegant in Serie A over the past few weeks. But like, you can't do both, you know. You can't have Musa on the field and Luca Della Torre unless you want to bench McKennie. You can't have Adams on the field and Busio unless you want to play Busio as an eight and bench Musa or McKennie. So it's like, I don't know. I don't know exactly what's going to make it work. And I feel like, to go back to Catholicism for a second, I'm just ready to be surprised by whatever, you know, emerges as the solution. Surprised by joy.
Totally. Yeah. Hopefully that is what's waiting for you. I'm just going to make one more like plea in regards to like Musa, in regards to the beautiful game and what we could potentially see and how he could help us break things down. And it's a clip that Sanjay posted on Twitter, maybe after the weekend. But it's Musa playing center mid, and it's him receiving the ball in a tight space with a guy on his back, super ball secure, finds a little pass to a guy, like a little layoff, and then immediately bursts up field again. And I still think that is going to be the untapped avenue that we can use to get beyond defenses. And that's going to be the verticality coming from center mids, rather than coming from Zardes or Pepe or the wingers. And it's going to be adding that player who, you know, draws the attention to himself because he has the ball and people, you know, collapse onto the ball and then can release it and then win the ensuing race upfield from the guys who just collapsed on him. And I think that he can do it. And I think McKennie can do it. And even Adams can do it from the sixth. So I'm still holding out hope that midfield is what can actually overrun teams who are sitting in a passive block, that it's not going to come from crosses. It's not going to come from forwards running behind, but it's going to come from just a midfield avalanche racing onto them.
How do you mentioned this in an online conversation earlier this week, but I want to ask you about it here. How do you feel about Berhalter continuing to stress the importance of verticality when, like, this was in reference to why he didn't bring Jordan Pefok, because he thought other strikers brought more line stretching verticality.
So I don't think that that's where we're going to win or lose, or I don't think that's where we're going to increase the number of chances we create. I don't really care that it's Zardes instead of Pefok. I think Pefok's strength is actually sort of like the old school target man, where he sits up high and you can just sort of like hit a ball from deep into his body and he will hold it and sort of hold a guy off and then find somebody else. But I don't think that that's necessarily how we're going to play. I think teams will have already given up a ton of the ground to us in this window. So it's going to be more about movement within that, coordinated movement with your wingers. I don't know. I don't think that that's necessarily a strength of Pefok. I'm not saying he can't do it, because I don't know that it's really a strength of Zardes either. But I don't think that the verticality Berhalter's stressing has been the problem. And it is a little concerning that he keeps harping on that. Like, you can't talk about the goals we scored against Honduras and in any way translate them to how the game played out against Canada. Like, those goals that we scored against Honduras, none of them came from like breaking down Honduras's block. They all came from these transition moments, every single one of them. And the Canada goal came in a transition moment. And almost all of our Gold Cup goals came in these transition counter-pressing moments. So we've gone so many games so long without actually showing that we can break down a block that there's no part of me that thinks it's going to be verticality. I think if teams open themselves up, we can punish them with that, and I hope we do. If anyone wants to open up and play that way full on, I think we'll destroy them, even without Pulisic and without Reyna. But for me, it's about how are we going to break down a block, and I do think our midfield three can give us that ability to put defenses on their heels, even while they're sitting already with a low starting position, low line of confrontation. I do think that those midfielders in the stable can do it.
Okay.
I'm optimistic.
And I am not, you know, arguing that 100% Luca Della Torre is the solution. You know, it's just a, as someone who's always looking for solutions for this team, there it's alluring to think of him that way, you know, but I recognize that he's probably not the solution.
He totally could, man. Like, again, going through that Canada game, going through the Honduras Nations League game, it was every bit almost like the mentality of like, okay, how do you push them back and then create just a little window? You don't have to do it all at once. Can you create a little bit of a window, a little bit of this Rondo mentality? And that's De La Torre is totally a Rondo player. So bringing that mentality into this game could 100% be enough to break open a block, because you just need that. You just need that first dent. You got to dent it somewhere and then see if you can make the rest of it collapse. And we just weren't trying that against Canada.
Yeah. All right, everybody. we've got John Arnold tomorrow. Waki and CONCACAF Edgar are going to, and I are going to do office hours on game day. Greg, you're welcome to join us. No pressure. Thursday at noon Eastern, I believe. And then we'll do a game recap on Friday. So a lot of content coming your way. I'll keep this brief. If you like the podcast, leave a review. I never ask for that, but I'm supposed to. I'm supposed to ask for that. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts, and then, you know, check out the Patreon. I'll leave a link in the show notes, and it's all explained on there. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you.